Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. Today, our story is titled Devil Tied by Kenneth E. Field. For the first time that weekend, Ken saw the sun peek down at him and the other seniors from Laurelwood Academy. His class was on its senior trip to the beach near Garibaldi, Oregon. Despite the cold of the ocean, he and a half dozen others had been body surfing. The frosty fingers of each wave numbed them a little more each minute, and then without warning, the movement of the water changed. A strong surface current began to flow outward from the shore. Ken stood up in the waist-deep water after an unsuccessful attempt at riding the waves to shore and wiped the salt water from his face. Even though he was thoroughly numb from cold, he could feel the subtle strength of that tide. He heard his friend Dan shout, "Sharon, you're in too deep!" For several seconds, the group stood frozen as the pounding roar of the breakers blocked out Sharon's reply. Then everything happened at once. Two boys, Wayne and Ben, swam after Sharon and were both caught in the iron-fisted grip of the rip current, or devil tide, as some call it. Two girls started toward shore screaming for help, while Dan and Ken stood their ground, afraid to swim out, afraid to go to shore. "Grab my hand, Ken," Dan shouted, "and if we go out, at least we'll go out together." Ken and Dan couldn't tell what was happening on shore. The waves hid that from their view. The sand beneath their feet grained itself away by the clawing undertow. Both knew that they were in serious trouble and that the other three were even in greater danger. The riptide was so strong now that they knew they would not be able to make it back to shore without help. Even so, Ken couldn't take his eye off those three bobbing heads, almost motionless between the crash of the waves. Shouts came from the direction of the shore, and Ken turned to see a human chain of students and teachers plowing through the water toward them. Debbie, Wayne's girlfriend, was leading the line. When it got to Dan and Ken, Ken grabbed her hand, though his own hand was so cold he could scarcely feel hers. As they swung out deeper into the surf, Debbie pleaded, "Wayne, oh Wayne, please swim, please come back." As they were struck again and again by waves now towering over their heads, Ken prayed silently, "God, save them, please help them swim." Now in water up to his chin, Dan still led them into the mountainous waves, stretching one arm out into the water. With Ken hanging on to his other hand and the rest stretching behind him, with a mighty effort, Dan clasped hands with Ben, the closest of the three swimmers, who in turn reached out toward Wayne and Sharon. Wayne somehow managed to push Sharon toward the rescue line. She was all but unconscious when they grabbed her, and Wayne looked completely exhausted when he finally caught hold of the human chain. The chain tightened and strained against the outgoing tide, threatening again and again to snap apart as they began their struggle for shore. All the seniors and teachers in the chain, almost 80 of them, were in the churning water up to their knees or deeper. The struggle was a desperate one. Once Ken turned to see a white-capped mountain of water avalanche over him, tearing at his grip on the human chain. He emerged from the sickening green of the sea, gagging and gasping for breath. They struggled against the devil tide, and slowly they won. As the group waded ashore, Sharon collapsed and had to be carried up to the fire. Pete and Debbie helped Wayne, who was sick from swallowing seawater. Janelle put her arm around Ken and helped him to the fire. He was shaking badly, and the flames didn't seem to warm him. Sharon lay wrapped in a blanket, gasping that she was so cold she couldn't breathe. A quiet group of students and faculty knelt down in the sand by the fire and prayed, thanking God they were all safe. Strangely enough, almost 80 people were right on the spot, when and where they were needed, and did not hesitate to get involved. Even though most were in dry clothing and the water was freezing, some, Ken learned later, could not even swim, but they waded into the water anyway. If just one or two decide to wander off from the group, some of them, including the author, would not be alive to tell the story. God's love and power during a time of danger was a wonderful graduation present. What a wonderful story. Now, today our topic is about writing. So we're going to interview an author at the National Religious Broadcasters Association who has written in a newspaper format. And you're going to just love this little interview that we do. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Ron Owens. And so we're here at the National Religious Broadcasters Association, so you might hear some noise in the background, but I so appreciate that you'll take some time out of your busy schedule and talk to us. You are the son of a retired U.S. Air Force sergeant, and you live in Sacramento, California. And there's some longevity in your family,
yes,
I understand.
There is.
You have a 104-year-old maternal grandmother and an octogenarian parents. So both your mother and father are still alive. You've been a Christian for more than 45 years. And you worked as a state civil service engineer or...
No, I work for the state of California.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And in that time, you felt inspired to do what we're going to talk about today, and that was to put the Bible into a newspaper type format.
That's correct.
So tell me a little bit about that very first beginning where you felt like this might be a cool thing to do.
Well, first of all, Rose, I want to thank you for having me on your program today, and I want to give a shout out to my grandmother, Lovelace C. Sterling. She'd be 105 years old on May 25th, 2014.
Yeah.
My mom is 82 and my dad is 81. So about now in California, they're probably at church. Anyway, several years ago, my dad was stationed at Patrick Air Force Base in Florida. And it was then, or could have been actually, at Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana. They purchased a hardbound book from the Reuben I. Foundation of Israel called Chronicles News of the Past. And in essence, they had stories of the Bible in a newspaper format that was bound by this hardbound book. Not only did they have Bible stories, but they also had what was going on in Europe at the time of Christ. And so that sort of was just deposited in my spirit way back in the late 60s, early 70s. For several years later, I was going to Bible college. And the papers that I would be writing in Bible college weren't scholarly. They were more like storytelling. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was the editor of a publication, and my job was to put together that publication. So that was when desktop publishing first became very, very popular. And so I started thinking about communicating God's word as if I was covering events of the day through the prism of a journalist. So I started writing stories, and in 1994, I produced a prototype David and Goliath edition that was exhibited at a church leadership and Sunday school convention where I lived. And from that point on, I began to think about writing Jesus' life in newspaper format. And so from 1997 to 2000, I rewrote the entire life of Jesus Christ, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, in chronological order in newspaper format. 125 stories, all packaged as if they were told from the paradigm of today's journalist. So I thought then, as I think now, that it would be very, very good curriculum for the home school where people, parents, can give their children an education of the Bible told from a perspective and of a newspaper.
Yeah, like journalism.
Exactly.
Now, how did you handle the harmony of those four Gospels? Did you retell the story each time?
Well, in essence, I amalgamated the Gospels, all the events, combined them into one chronological retelling, and the stories start from when Mary was conceived by the Holy Spirit through the birth of Jesus Christ And then, of course, there were about 18 years of silence after Jesus, the young lad, was in the temple and picked up the story with John the Baptist. And, of course, the 3 years of Jesus' life through telling all of the miracles, who he interacted with, and, of course, when he was arrested, tried, crucified, died, and ascended.
Now, our listeners can go to your website, thebiblenewspaper.com.
That is correct.
And that's just all spelled out.
Yes.
So describe how this product looks.
Well, we have a couple of products that we're presenting. Number one, we have the opportunity where people can go to our www.thebiblenewspaper.com, and thank you for reminding me to stress to your listeners to share that web address, and they can order the Bible newspaper electronically. Another thing that I have been working on since the last 4 years, I've identified 25 characters in the Gospels, and I'm retelling their stories as if I'm them. We have a book that is being sold at the NRB convention now, and you can also order the book online, where it's titled Judas, Betrayer of Jesus. It's a very quick read, 3 chapters. Simplicity can be very profound, I've discovered in writing. The first chapter, I pretend as if I'm Judas. I'm sharing with the reader why I betrayed Jesus. Now, when I was writing that chapter, I'm thinking, Judas, this is not working.
Yeah.
So the second chapter is how I betrayed Jesus. And, of course, the third chapter are the internal consequences of betraying Jesus. But what I learned from that is Judas was the very first person to really seek forgiveness. And the lesson, but he went to the wrong place. He went to people who didn't really do him any good. He should have waited for at least 3 days, and Jesus would have forgiven him, just like he forgave Peter, who denied him 3 times, and the disciples who forsook him, and all the other people who did him wrong. So the lesson of the Judas tragedy is when you sin, go to Jesus. Don't go to anybody else, because Jesus is the only one who can forgive you.
That is profound. So do you do this full time now? Has this become your livelihood? Are you continuing to?
Well, I'm at the end of my state career. I'm looking at transitioning in the future, and when I'm able to do that, there's so many other works that I have targeted and wanting to write about. The Bible is so rich with drama.
Yes,
and
yes.
So many lessons as well. I'm really excited about the Spectators of Jesus the Christ book. The Judas book that I've just shared with you about is just 3 chapters from that larger Spectators of Jesus the Christ book. There's also a book about Lucifer that people can order online. It's called Lucifer, Enemy of God. And in essence, it's a retelling, summarizing of the entire Old Testament told from Lucifer's or Satan's perspective, how Lucifer, devolved into Satan, and how he evolved himself in the affairs of man and woman in the Old Testament. That particular book is actually the exhaustive chapter 1 of the larger Spectators of Jesus the Christ book. So we've got Lucifer at the beginning of the Spectators of Jesus the Christ, and then we identified Mary, the mother of Jesus, Joseph, the father of Jesus, Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, all throughout, even the Roman centurion who crucified Jesus, telling their stories about how they interacted with Jesus in the first person.
So what research does one need to do what you're doing?
You know, again, simplicity is profoundity. That's my motto. I've kept it simple. There's so many great books out there and resources and concordances. I just read the King James Version. And I had a very mentor in my life who used to stress to myself and other students, let the Bible interpret the Bible. And so in essence, I just strictly just used the Bible. I purposely stayed away from other resources. I'm really excited about seeing the movie Noah that's coming out in a not too distant future, but I'm not going to see that movie until I finish writing Noah when he built the ark. There's so much interesting information there. So much silence between Genesis chapter 6 and Genesis chapter 7. 100 years of non-verbal communication between him and God. And so I'm going to fill in those blanks when I write the first-person account of Noah. I'm really excited about seeing Son of God. Now that I've finished Spectators of Jesus the Christ and rewritten the Gospels in newspaper format, I have, you know, I won't be influenced by what I see when I see that movie. So I'm excited about seeing that movie as well. But answering your question, I just stick with reading the King James Version and just am giving the readers fresh bread. And this would be great material for the homeschooling parents.
Now, the format, you know, if I actually had the product here in front of me, does it look like a newspaper?
Well, the digital form will look like a newspaper. The book that is being exhibited here, and we'd like to invite you to our booth when you can. It is a book which can be available digitally as well as the book in hard form. The Lucifer, Enemy of God, is available in digital format at thebiblenewspaper.com. We haven't come out with the book on that yet, but we will in the not-too-distant future. And Spectators of Jesus the Christ is still under production. I just completed that book a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to be offering that digitally as well as in tangible format.
So it's Lucifer, the Enemy of Jesus Christ, or the Enemy of God?
Lucifer, Enemy of God.
Lucifer, Enemy of God. Welcome, welcome. I'm talking with Ron Owens. He is the author of a number of items. The Spectator, the Testament Spectator.
That's my pseudonym, yes.
That's it. Okay. So that covers the Gospels.
Right. Let me explain about
I'm at a little bit of disadvantage because I don't have the product.
Right. And
here,
we were walking up here. We wanted to make sure that we were on time. And I forgot my material to give to you, Rose. So I apologize for that. The Bible newspaper that is available at thebiblenewspaper.com are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in newspaper format. The Spectators of Jesus the Christ are 25 characters that I've identified in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And whereas the Bible newspaper, where I am explaining from the general news story of the events that occur in Jesus' life, the Spectators of Jesus the Christ is like an internal thing where I'm kind of drilling deeper. You know, what was the woman at the well thinking and feeling when she was walking toward the well? What was going through her mind? What was the fears of the Pharisee whose child was dying? What was going through his mind? I mean, think about the peer pressure, his Pharisaical, I don't know if I said that word correctly, his Pharisee's brethren.
Yeah.
He was probably facing peer pressure, and he might have had this internal struggle. Should I go to Jesus or should I not? If I go to Jesus, they might ostracize me. But if I don't go to Jesus, my daughter might die. So he's having that struggle. So I sort of put that kind of element with the characters. I'm not saying this is how it is, but you know, in 2014, people are generally the same as they were back in Jesus' day. So the same fears, the same trepidations, the same hesitations that people had back in those days when they came to Jesus. I mean, just think of the Roman centurion who just told Jesus, you know, I just say the word. Say the word, and my servant will be healed. So he's looking at the whole Jesus healing thing as a regimental, you know, I gave orders, I take orders. So I use that essay to sort of describe the mindset of a soldier. You know, I kind of question this Jesus guy. I mean, he gives a great speech and everything. We've got see these people come and go. You know, I'm a very regimental person. I don't believe in the hereafter. But this guy, he's something different. So I kind of you use that angle to get into the characters.
I want to talk about Lucifer, enemy of God.
Okay.
You know, you've rented space in your brain to the enemy of God.
Right.
And just maybe walk us through that. That really actually takes a strong spiritual warrior.
Yes, it does.
To address Lucifer, the enemy of God, and to write about it. So just maybe share with us some of the struggle and challenges you had with that.
Well, the challenges is that we, number one, Satan or Lucifer is a defeated foe. So we need not fear him because of Jesus, the power of Jesus, the blood of Jesus. And you're right, it takes a certain level of maturity. But I felt like I had to deal with the topic. We need to know who our enemy is. We need to understand that a lot of stuff that occurs is because of a spiritual dynamic. It's not a flesh thing. The Bible is replete of that, particularly in Ephesians 6:10, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in the high places. It talks about the importance of putting on the armor of God. But if you put on the whole armor of God, you got to know who your enemy is. Where did he come from? What did he do? And so the Lucifer, enemy of God, is identifying who he is, where he came from, what he did in the Old Testament, who he affected, and it's just basically taking the reader, using the literary character of Satan, and viewing the Old Testament through his eyes. He was gleeful, for example, when God repented for creating man. He was happy, and he was kind of stirring the pot about Job, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he was really... he tried to entice, for example, the Archangel Michael when, at the time of Moses' death, Michael was struggling about that. So that is told in Lucifer, Enemy of God. Again, he tried to cause confusion in David's life when David was counting the census. And, of course, when... at the, it's not coming to my mind, but the place, Mount Moriah, when Jesus appeared, and of course David fell down in worship, and all the other people saw that, you know that Satan must have cowered away in fear when he saw that, okay? He was happy when the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom was split up, and how the Israelites just forsook God and followed after other gods. So basically, Lucifer, enemy of God, is taking the reader chronologically from the beginning of time through the time that he fell. And it's interesting, in that account in Isaiah, where there's these I wills.
Just remind our listeners, we've been talking with Ron Owens, the author of The Testament Spectator, which is...
The Bible newspaper.
The Bible newspaper, and...
Judas, Betrayer of Jesus.
Judas, Betrayer.
Lucifer, enemy of God. And the larger 98,000-word book is called Spectators of Jesus the Christ.
Okay.
And I want to add a point of information that the Lucifer, Enemy of God book that's available digitally will be the chapter one, Accuser of the Brethren, in the larger Spectators of Jesus the Christ. I packaged it that way.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much,
and
Rose.
I just have one last thing to say now.
Okay.
God bless.